screens behind the bar. Syndra continued the mindless chanting in her head. We belong here. We are not suspicious. Until the statements blurred together into a sensation of invisibility. They weren't suspicious. They did belong here. She forced herself to believe it. Scanning the crowd, she saw that only one set of eyes was still on her. Vibrant blue and filled with laughter. He was a muscular man sitting at a table near the back, a smile playing on his mouth. When Cinder's gaze held his, he sat back and lifted his attention to the screens.
Come on then, said Thorn, guiding her toward an open booth.
The sound of the door creaking behind them sent Cinder's stomach heaving like a dying motor. They slid into the booth.
This was a bad idea, she whispered,
tucking the power cell beside her on the bench. Thorn said nothing, both of them bending their necks over the table as three red uniforms brushed past. A scanner beeped, sending Cinder's pulse thrumming against her temples, and the last officer paused. With her cyborg hand beneath the table, Cinder deftly opened the barrel of her embedded tranquilizer gun, the first time she'd engaged that finger since Dr. Erland had given her the hand. The officer remained beside their booth, and Cinder forced herself to turn toward him, thinking, innocence, normal, indistinguishable from anyone else. The officer was holding a port screen with a built-in ID scanner. Cinder gulped and looked up. He was young, perhaps in his early 20s, and his face was contorted in confusion.
Is there a problem, monsieur? She said, sickened to hear her own voice come out as saccharine sweet as she'd once heard Queen Lavanna's.
His eyes blinked wildly. The attention of the other officers, one man and one woman, was captured too, and Cinder could see them hovering nearby. Heat spread out from the base of her neck, creeping uncomfortably down her limbs. She clenched her fists. The wash of energy in the room was pulsing, almost visible. Her optobionics were beginning to panic, sending concerned warnings about hormones and chemical imbalances across her eyesight, and all the while she desperately grasped for control over her lunar gift.
I am invisible. I am unimportant. You do not recognize me. Please don't recognize me.
Officer?
You are, His eyes darted from the port to her face, and he shook his head to dispel the cobwebs.
We're looking for someone, and this says...
You wouldn't happen to... Everyone was watching now. The waitresses, the customers, the eerie guy with the stormy eyes. No amount of internal pleading could make her invisible when a military officer from another country was speaking to her. She was becoming dizzy with the effort of it. Her body was warming, sweat beating on her brow. She gulped.
Is everything all right, officer?
His brow drew together.
We're looking for a girl, a teenager, from the Eastern Commonwealth. You wouldn't happen to be Lynn...
Cinder raised her eyebrows, feigning ignorance. Peony? Chapter 36. Cinder's smile froze to her face. Peony's name was like a stone on her chest, pressing the air out of her lungs as memories fell across her vision. Peony scared and alone in the quarantines. Peony dying, with the antidote still in Cinder's hand. The pain was instant, fire ripping through her muscles. Cinder cried out and gripped the table, nearly falling out of the booth. The officer stumbled back, and his female comrade yelled, "It's her!" Cinder felt the table being shoved toward her as Thorn jumped up. It took a moment for the burning to dwindle. The taste of salt lingered on her tongue, and someone screamed, and in the muddle of her brain, she heard chair and table legs screeching across the floor. The woman's voice, "Lynn Cinder, we are taking you into custody!" Red text flashed across her retina. Internal temperature above recommended control temp. If cool-down procedure does not engage, automatic shutdown will occur in 1 minute.
Lynn Cinder, slowly place your hands on top of your head. Do not make any sudden movements.
She blinked past the bright fog in her vision, barely making out the officer with a gun pointed at her forehead. Behind her,
Thorn was swinging a punch at the nose of the young man with the port, who ducked, then swung back. The third officer had his gun on the two men as they collapsed in a brawl onto a nearby table. Cinder took a deep breath, glad that only a residue of the pain lingered beneath her skin. 50 seconds until automatic, she released the breath slowly. Shutdown countdown paused, temperatures dropping, cool down procedure engaged.
Lynn Cinder, the woman said again, put your hands on top of your head. I have been authorized to shoot to kill if necessary.
She forgot that one of her fingertips was open, ready with the dart as it passed her gaze.
Slowly come out of the booth and turn around.
The woman stepped away to allow Cinder room to maneuver. Behind her, Thorn grunted as a punch collided with his stomach, and he slumped over. Cinder recoiled at the sound, but did as she was told, waiting for her guts to stop churning, for the weakness to pass. She tried to prepare her brain for the attempt, knowing she would only get one more chance at it. She stood from the booth, just as they were ratcheting handcuffs around Thorn's wrists. Cinder turned around. From the corner of her eye, she saw the officer reach for her belt.
You don't want to do that,
Cinder said, again cringing at the lovely serenity of her own voice.
You want to let us go.
The officer paused and stared at her with hollow eyes.
You want to let us go.
The command was directed at all the officers, at everyone in the tavern, even the frightened patrons who had pushed themselves against the back wall. Cinder's head buzzed with the return of strength and control and power.
You want to let us go.
The female officer dropped her arms to her sides.
We want to let you.
A guttural cry ricocheted across the tavern. Beyond the officer, the man with the blue eyes moved to stand, but then collapsed over his table. The table legs snapped from the weight, and he crashed to the floor. The other customers pulled away from him. Everyone's attention diverted. Cinder glanced at Thorn, who was watching the spectacle with his hands locked behind his back. The stranger snarled. He was crouching down on all fours, saliva dripping from his mouth. Beneath dark eyebrows, his eyes had taken on an eerie luminescence and a crazed, bloodthirsty expression that twisted Cinder's stomach. He curled his fingers, pulling his nails across the hard floor, and peered up at the terrified faces surrounding him. A growl rolled up from his throat, and his lips curled, revealing teeth that came to a fine point, more canine than human. Cinder pressed herself against the bench, sure her momentary meltdown had fried something, that her optobionics were sending crossed messages to her brain. But her vision didn't clear. In unison, the military officers rounded their guns on the man, but he showed no concern. He seemed pleased at the horrified cries, the way the crowd surged away from him. He lunged for the nearest officer before he could pull the trigger. His hands wrapped around the officer's head. A loud snap, and the officer fell lifeless to the ground. It happened so fast, every movement a blur. Screaming filled the tavern. There was a stampede for the door, customers struggling over the crashed tables and chairs. Ignoring the crowd, the man smirked at Cinder. She stumbled back into the booth, trembling.
Hello, little girl,
he said, his voice too human-like, too restrained.
I believe my queen has been looking for you.
He leapt for her. Cinder pulled back, unable to scream. The female officer jumped between them, facing Cinder, her arms spread wide out in protection, her face completely, entirely blank. Her lifeless eyes peered down at Cinder, even as the man howled with rage and grabbed her from behind. He wrapped one arm around her head, yanking her back and sinking his fangs into her throat. She didn't scream, didn't fight. A bloodied gurgle erupted from her mouth. A gun fired. The crazed man roared and picked up the officer, swinging her around like a dog would a toy and tossing her halfway across the tavern. She crumpled to the ground as another shot rang out, catching the man in the shoulder. Bellowing, he whipped forward, snatching the gun away from the remaining officer with one hand. He swiped with the other, his fingers curled into a claw that left four red gashes on the officer's face. Heart hammering, Cinder gaped down at the woman as the life drained out of her eyes. Her gasps stuck in her throat. Her heart was pounding so hard it was sure to break out of her chest. White spots specked her vision. She couldn't breathe.
Cinder!
She searched the room, dazed, and found Thorn scrambling out from behind a toppled table, with his hands still latched behind his back. He collapsed to his knees beside the bench.
Come on! The cuffs!
Her lungs burned. Her eyes stung. She was hyperventilating.
I killed her, she stammered.
What?
I killed... She was...
This is not the time to go crazy, Cinder.
You don't understand. It was me. I...
Thorn threw himself at her, his forehead hitting hers so hard she yelped and fell back onto the bench.
Pull yourself together and help me unlock these things.
She grabbed onto the table and hauled herself back up. Head aching, she blinked at Thorn, then at the officer who lay slumped against the wall, neck dangling at an odd angle. Her brain struggling to grasp on to reality, she lurched forward, dragging Thorn with her through the toppled chairs. Crouching beside the first fallen officer, she grabbed his arm and held up his wrist. Thorn twisted his hands toward her, and the cuffs blinked and fell open. Cinder dropped the limp hand and stood. She bolted for the door, but something grabbed her ponytail and hauled her backward. She cried out, falling onto a table. Glass bottles shattered beneath her, water and alcohol soaking into the back of her shirt. The crazed man hovered over her, leering. Blood was dripping out from his lips and bullet wounds, but he hardly seemed to notice. Cinder tried to scramble backward, but she slipped, a shard of glass slicing through her palm. She gasped.
I would ask what brought you to Little Rieux of France, but I think I already know.
He smiled, but it was haunting and unnatural, with the jutting canines slicked with blood.
So sad for you that we found the old lady first, and now my pack has you both. I wonder what my reward will be when I bring your leftover pieces to my queen in a plastic box.
Thorn roared and heaved a chair upward, breaking it over the man's back. The man spun around and Cinder used the distraction to roll off the table. She collapsed to the floor, looking up just as the man buried his teeth in Thorn's arm. A scream.
Thorn!
The man pulled away, chin dripping with blood, and let Thorn collapse to his knees. His eyes glinted.
Your turn.
He took two sauntering steps toward her. Cinder upended the table, creating a blockade between them, but he kicked it aside with a laugh. Standing, she raised her hand and fired a tranquilizer dart into his chest. He snarled and yanked the dart out like a minor annoyance. Cinder backed away. Tripping over a fallen chair, she cried out and collapsed backward onto the warm, unmoving body of the officer who had managed to get off two useless bullets. The man grinned sickeningly, then paused again, paling. His cruel smile vanished and, with one more step, he crashed face first onto the ground. Cinder stared, stomach in knots, at his still form amid the wreckage. When he didn't move, she dared to glance at the dead officer whose blood was leaking onto her collarbone. Rolling off him, she grabbed the gun that had been tossed onto the floor and shoved herself back to her feet. She seized Thorn's elbow and stuffed the gun into his hand. He moaned in pain but didn't fight her as she hauled him to his feet and shoved him toward the door. Rushing back to the booth, Cinder tucked the power cell under her arm before running after him. The street was chaos, people screaming and barreling out of the buildings and crying hysterically. Cinder spotted the two policemen who had been inspecting the pod ship, trying to direct a fleeing crowd. A window shattered as a man threw himself through the glass, the creepy man from the parts store, and tackled one of the police in the same movement. His jaws latched on to the officer's neck. Nausea welled up in Cinder as the maniac released the officer and turned his bloodied face up to the sky. He howled. A long, proud, ominous howl. Cinder's dart caught him in the neck, silencing him. He had time to turn his glower on her before he collapsed onto his side. It didn't seem to matter. As Cinder and Thorn ran for their abandoned pod ship, the man's howl was picked up by another, and another, half a dozen unearthly calls being sent up in every direction to greet the rising moon.
Chapter 37.
What was that?
Thorn yelled as he peeled the pod ship off the street. Flying lower and much faster than regulations suggested, they fled over the patchwork of crops that surrounded the town of Rieux. Cinder shook her head, still panting.
They were lunar. He mentioned his queen.
Thorn slammed his palm down on the pod ship's control board, cursing.
I know lunars are supposed to have some screws loose, no offense, but those men were psychotic. He practically gnawed off my arm. And this is my favorite jacket!
Cinder glanced over at Thorn, but his injured shoulder was the one turned away from her. She could, however, make out a red welt where he'd pounded his forehead into hers in order to snap her from her delirium. She pressed her cool metal fingers to her own forehead, which was starting to throb, and noticed a skein of text in her vision that she'd been too terrified and distracted to notice before.
Where are you?
Iko's panicking. Thorn swerved around an abandoned tractor.
I forgot about the police. Is my ship all right?
Hold on. Sick to her stomach at the swerving, Cinder gripped her harness and called up a new comm.
On our way. Are the police still there?
Iko's response was almost instantaneous.
No, they stuck a tracking device to the bottom of the ship and left. Something about a disturbance in Rieux. I'm looking at the net screens now. Cinder, are you seeing this?
She gulped, but didn't answer.
The police are gone. They left a tracker.
Well, that's predictable. Thorn swooped down, catching the tip of a windmill on the landing gear. Cinder saw the Rampian only a few miles off, a large gray splotch amid the crops, barely discernible in the night.
Iko, open the pod ship dock.
By the time the pod dipped toward the Rampian, the dock was wide open. Cinder squeezed her eyes shut, bracing herself against the seat as Thorn dove toward it too fast, but he released the thrusters just in time, and soon they were coming to a very rocky, sudden stop. The pod ship shuddered and died. Cinder had tumbled out of the side door before the lights faded.
Iko, where's the tracker?
Stars, Cinder, where have you been? What is going on out there?
No time! The tracker!
It's under the starboard landing gear!
I'll get it, said Thorn, marching toward the wide-open doors. Iko, seal the dock as soon as I'm out. Then, open the main hatch. Cinder, get that power cell installed.
He jumped down off the dock, and Cinder heard a squelch of mud when he landed. A moment later, the interlocking doors began to slide shut.
Wait!
The doors froze, leaving a space not larger than Cinder's pounding head between them.
What? Cried Iko. I thought he was out. Did I crush him?
No, no, he's fine. I just have to do something.
Chewing on her lip, she knelt on one knee. Yanking her pant leg up, she unlatched the compartment to her prosthetic leg and found two small chips lodged in the mess of bundled wires. The direct communication chip, glittering with its peculiar iridescence, and Peony's ID chip, still caked with dried blood. Those officers had tracked her through Peony's chip, and she wouldn't have been surprised if Lavanna's minions had found her the same way.
I'm so stupid,
she muttered, prying the chip loose. Her heart suddenly clamped up, but she did her best to ignore it as she brushed a quick kiss against the ID chip and threw it out into the field. It glinted once with moonlight before vanishing in the dark.
All right, you can close the doors now.
As the doors clanged shut, she threw herself toward the pod ship and pulled the power cell off the floorboard. The engine room glowed with red emergency lights. Her retina display had already pulled up the plans by the time she slithered on her stomach to the ship's exterior corner and unbolted the old power cell. When she yanked it free, the whole ship went black. She cursed to herself.
Cinder!
Came Thorn's distraught scream from somewhere overhead. Cinder flicked on her flashlight and tore off the protective packaging on the new cell, her breaths coming in short, panicked gasps. It didn't take long for the engine room to grow stifling hot without the cooling system. She plugged a cable into the cell's outlet, then bolted it to the engine. Already she was forgetting how she'd ever managed to survive without the screwdriver in her new hand as she secured the cell to the wall. The overlaid blueprint on her vision zoomed in as she connected the delicate wires. Gulping, she punched the restart code into the mainframe. The engine hummed, grew louder, and soon purred like a contented cat. The red lights flickered back on and were just as quickly replaced with bright whites.
Aiko?
The response was almost instantaneous.
What just happened? Why won't anyone tell me what's going on?
Exhaling, Cinder dropped to her stomach and wriggled back toward the door. She grasped the ladder rungs that led to the ship's main level, calling out,
"Ready for takeoff!"
No sooner had the words left than the combustors flared beneath her and the ship lurched up off the ground. Cinder screamed and grasped the ladder, clinging tight to it as the Rampian hovered momentarily before shooting up into the sky, away from the destruction happening in Michel Benoit's beautiful hometown. When they'd entered orbit again, Cinder found Thorn in the cockpit, slumped in his chair, with both arms draped toward the floor. "We should clean our wounds," she said, seeing the dark spot of blood on his shoulder. Thorn nodded without facing her.
"Yeah, I definitely don't want to catch whatever he had."
Her right leg shaking under her own weight, Cinder made her way awkwardly into the medbay, grateful she'd had the forethought to clear the crates away from it, and found an assortment of bandages and ointments.
"Nice takeoff back there," she said when she joined Thorn in the cockpit.
"Captain?" He grunted, sulking as Cinder used her embedded knife to cut open his sticky sleeve.
"How does it feel?"
she asked, examining the bite marks on his arm.
"Like I was bit by a feral dog?"
"Are you lightheaded? Woozy? You lost a lot of blood."
"I'm fine," he said, glowering. "Pretty upset about my jacket."
"It could have been a lot worse."
She ripped off a long band of medical tape.
"I could have used you as a human shield like that officer."
Her voice hiccuped on the last word. A headache was coming on, starting in her desert dry eyes as she wrapped a bandage around Thorn's arm and taped it.
"What happened?"
She shook her head and peered down at the gash in her palm.
"I don't know,"
she said, awkwardly wrapping the tape around it too.
"Cinder, I didn't mean to."
She slumped back in her own chair. She felt sick, remembering the dead, blank stare of the woman as she put herself between Cinder and that man.
"I just panicked, and the next thing I knew, she was there in front of me. I didn't even try. It just happened."
She shoved herself out of the chair and marched out into the cargo bay, needing room to breathe, to move, to think.
"This is exactly what I was talking about. Having this gift, it's turning me into a monster, just like those men, just like Levana."
She rubbed her temples, biting back her next confession. Maybe it wasn't just being lunar. Maybe it ran in her blood. Maybe she was just like her aunt, just like her mother, who had been no better.
"Or maybe," Thorn said, "it was an accident, and you're still learning."
"An accident?"
she spun around.
"I killed a woman!"
Thorn held up a finger.
"No, that blood-sucking, howling wolf man killed her."
"Cinder, you were scared. You didn't know what you were doing. He was coming after me, and I just used her."
"And you think he would have left the rest of us alone once he had you?"
Cinder clamped her jaw shut, stomach still churning.
"I get that you feel like it was your fault, but let's try to put some of the blame where it belongs here."
Cinder frowned at Thorn, but she was seeing that man again, with his haunting blue eyes and sick smile.
"They have Michel Benoit," she shuddered. "And that's my fault too. They were looking for me."
"Now what are you rambling on about?"
"He knew that's why we came to Rieux. But he said they'd already found her. The old lady, he said. But they only came after her because they're trying to find me."
Thorn pulled a palm down his face. Cinder, you're being delusional. Michel Benoit housed Princess Celine. If they tracked her down, that's why. It has nothing to do with you. She gulped, her entire body shaking.
She might still be alive. We have to try and find her.
Since neither of you will tell me anything, said Aiko, her voice taut, I'll just have to guess. Were you by chance attacked by men who fought like starved wild animals?
Thorn and Cinder traded glances. Cinder noticed that the cargo bay had grown abnormally warm during her tirade.
Good guess, said Thorn.
They're talking about it all over the news feeds, said Aiko. It's not just in France. It's happening all over the world, every country in the Union. Earth is under attack.
Chapter 38. Howls filled the theater's basement. From the corner of her bed, in the cell's near blackness, Scarlett held her breath and listened. The lonesome cries were muffled and distant, somewhere out on the streets. But they must have been loud indeed to reach all the way to her dungeon. And there seemed to be dozens of them. Animals seeking one another in the night, eerie and haunting. There shouldn't be wild animals in the city. Peeling herself off the bed, Scarlett crept toward the bars. A light filtered down the hallway from the stairs that led up to the stage, but it was so faint she could barely make out the iron bars over her own door. She peered down the corridor. No movement. No sound. An exit sign that probably hadn't been lit up in 100 years. She peered the other direction. Only blackness. She had the sinking sensation of being trapped all alone, of being left to die in this underground prison. Another howl echoed up, louder this time, though still stifled. Perhaps on the street just outside the theater. Scarlett slicked her tongue over her lips. Hello? She started, tentatively. When there was no response, not even a distant howl, she tried again, louder.
Is anyone out there?
She shut her eyes to listen. No footsteps.
I'm hungry.
No shuffling.
I need to use the bathroom.
No voices.
I'm going to escape now.
But no one cared. She was alone. She squeezed the bar, wondering if it was a trap. Perhaps they were luring her into a false security, testing her to see what she would do. Perhaps they wanted her to try to escape so they could use it against her. Or perhaps, just perhaps, Wolf really had meant to help her. She snarled. If it wasn't for him, she wouldn't be in this mess to begin with. If he'd told her the truth and explained to her what was going on, she would have come up with another plan to get her grandma out, rather than be led like a lamb to the feast. The joints in her fingers started to burn from clenching the bars too tight. Then, from the hollowness of the basement, she heard her name. Weak and uncertain, posed as a delirious question. Scarlett? Stomach clenching, Scarlett pushed her face into the bars, their coldness squeezing her cheekbones.
Hello?
She started to shake as she waited.
Scarlett? Grand-mère? Grand-mère?
The voice went silent, as if speaking had drained it. Scarlett thrust herself away from the barred door and ran back to the bed, claiming the small chip she'd tucked beneath the mattress. She returned to the door desperate, pleading, hoping. If Wolf had tricked her about this. She reached through the bar and flicked the chip across the scanner. It chimed, the same sickeningly cheerful chime it had given when her guards brought her food, a sound she had despised until this moment. The bar swung open without resistance. Scarlett lingered in the open doorway, her pulse racing. Again, she found herself straining to hear any sound of her guards, but the opera house seemed abandoned. She stumbled away from the stairwell, into the blackness of the hallway. Her hands on the walls to either side were her only guides. When she came to another iron-barred door, she paused and leaned against the opening.
Grand-mère?
Each cell was empty. 3, 4, 5 cells, all empty.
Grand Mère,
she whispered. At the 6th door, a whimper.
Scarlet. Grand Mère!
She dropped the chip in her excitement and immediately fell to the floor in search of it.
Grand Mère, it's all right. I'm here. I'm going to get you.
Her fingers found the chip and she whipped it up before the scanner. A wash of relief covered her when it chimed, although a pained, terrified sound came from her grandmother upon hearing it. Scarlet yanked the bars open and pushed into the cell, not bothering to stand lest she accidentally trip over her grandmother in the darkness. The cell was rank with the stench of urine and sweat and old, stale air.
Grandmère!
She found her huddled on the gritty stone ground against the back wall.
Grandmère! Scar, how? It's me, I'm here, I'm going to get you out of here!
Her words dissolved into sobs as she grasped her grandma's frail arms, pulling her into an embrace. Her grandma cried out, an awful, pitiable sound that cut through Scarlet's ears. She gasped and laid her back down.
Don't,
her grandma whimpered, her body sliding limply down to the ground.
Oscar, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be here. I can't stand you being here. Scarlet!
She started crying, choking, wet sobs burbling up from her. Scarlet hovered over her grandma's body, fear gripping every muscle. She couldn't remember hearing her grandma cry before.
What did they do to you?
She whispered, drawing her hands over her grandmother's shoulders. Beneath a thin, tattered shirt, there were the lumps of bandages and something damp and sticky. Biting back her own tears, she traced her grandmother's chest and ribs. The bandages were everywhere. She stroked the woman's arms and hands. Her hands were shaped more like clubs now, so covered in bandages.
No, don't touch them!
Her grandma tried to pull away, but her limbs only twitched uncontrollably. As tenderly as she could, Scarlet ran her thumb over her grandma's hands. Hot tears slipped down her cheeks.
What did they do to you? Scar, you have to get out of here.
Each word a struggle until she could barely talk, barely breathe. Scarlet knelt over her, resting her head on her grandma's breast and stroking the sticky hair off her brow.
It's going to be all right. I'm going to get you out of here, and we're going to go to the hospital, and you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine.
She forced herself to sit up.
Can you walk? Have they done anything to your legs? I can't walk. I can't move. You have to leave me here, Scarlet. You have to get out. I'm not leaving you. They've all left, Grandmère. We have time. We just need to figure out a way. I can carry you.
Tears dripped off Scarlet's chin.
Come here, my love. Come closer.
Scarlet swiped at her nose and buried her face against her grandma's neck. Arms tried to encircle her, but served to only beat weakly against her sides.
I didn't want to involve you in this. I'm so sorry. Grandmère! Hush, listen. I need you to do something for me. Something important.
She shook her head.
Stop it! You're going to be all right! Listen to me, Scarlet.
Even her grandmother's faint voice seemed to drop.
Princess Celine is alive.
Scarlet squeezed her eyes shut.
Stop talking, please! Save your strength! She went to live in the Eastern Commonwealth with a family by the name of Lin. A man named Lin. Garen.
A sad, frustrated sigh.
I know, Grandmère. I know you kept her, and I know you gave her to a man in the Commonwealth, but it doesn't matter anymore. It's not your problem anymore. I'm going to get you out of here, and I'll keep you safe. No, darling, you must find her. She'll be a teenager now, a cyborg.
Scarlet blinked, wishing she could see her grandmother in the blackness.
A cyborg? Unless she's changed her name. She's called Cinder now.
The name struck a chord of familiarity in the back of Scarlet's mind, but her brain was too clouded to pinpoint it.
Grammer, please stop talking. I have to.
You must find her. Logan and Garen are the only ones who know, and if the Queen found me, she can find them. Someone must tell the girl who she is. Someone must find her. You must find her.
Scarlet shook her head. I don't care about the stupid princess. I care about you. I'm going to protect you.
I can't go with you.
Her padded hands rubbed against Scarlet's arm.
Please, Scarlet. She could make all the difference.
Scarlet shrank down.
She'll just be a teenager, she managed between her renewed sobs. What can she do?
She remembered then. The name. The news feeds flashing through her thoughts. A girl running down palace steps, falling, landing in a heap on a gravel path. Lynn Cinder, a teenager, a cyborg, a lunar. She gulped. So Lavanna had already found the girl. Found, but lost her again.
It doesn't matter,
she murmured, laying her head against her grandma's chest. It's not our problem. I'm going to get you out of here. We're going to get away. Her mind desperately searched for a way they could escape together. Something to use as a stretcher or a wheelchair or... But there was nothing. Nothing that could make it up the stairs. Nothing she could carry. Nothing her grandma could endure. Her heart broke. The pain of it pushing a wail out of her throat. She couldn't leave her like this. She couldn't let them hurt her anymore.
My sweet girl.
She clamped her eyes shut, pushing out two more hot tears.
Grandmère, who is Logan Tanner?
Her grandma brushed a light kiss against Scarlet's forehead.
He's a good man, Scarlet. He would have loved you. I hope you'll meet him someday. Tell him... Hello for me. Tell him goodbye.
A sob cut through Scarlet's heart. Her grandma's shirt was soaked through with her tears. She couldn't bring herself to tell her that Logan Tanner was dead, had gone crazy, had killed himself. Her grandfather.
I love you, Grandmère. You're everything to me.
The heavy bandaged limbs stroke her knees.
I love you too, my brave, stubborn girl.
She sniffed and vowed to herself that she would stay until morning. She would stay forever. She wouldn't abandon her. If her captors came back, they would find them together. Kill them together if they must. She would never leave her again. The vow was made, the promise determined. When she heard footsteps echoing down the corridor. Chapter 39. Hunkering down over her grandmother, Scarlet turned toward the hallway. Old wires hummed overhead, and pale light flooded the cell. The door still stood open, the bars casting skeletal shadows along the floor. Her eyes adjusted slowly. She held her breath, listening. But the footsteps had stopped. Still, someone was there. Someone was coming. Her grandmother's bandaged hand slipped into hers, and she turned back. Her gut clamped. Streaks of dried blood were on the weathered face. Her hair was tangled and matted. She was little more than a wasted skeleton now, though her brown eyes were still strong, still vibrant. Still filled with more love than was kept in all the rest of the world.
Run, she whispered.
Scarlet shook her head.
I'm not leaving you. This is not your fight. Run, Scarlet, now.
Footsteps again, growing closer. Clenching her jaw, Scarlet pulled herself onto shaking legs and faced the door. Her heart was galloping, waiting as the steps grew louder. Maybe it was Wolf, come to help her, to help them. She was dizzy from the fluttering of her pulse, unable to believe that she wanted to see him again after everything he'd done to her. But he'd given her the chip, and he was strong, strong enough to carry her grandmother. If it was Wolf, returned for her, they'd be saved. She saw the shadow cross the floor before the man stepped into the threshold. It was Ran, and he was smiling. Scarlet gulped and solidified her knees, determined not to show her fear. But there was something different about Ran now. His eyes were no longer merely ruthless. Now, they were hungry, peering at Scarlet like she was a treat, one he'd been looking forward to for a long time.
Ah, little fox, and just how did you get out of your cell?
A shudder ripped through her.
Leave my granddaughter alone.
Her grandmother's raspy voice had gained an ounce of strength. She stirred, trying to sit up. Scarlet dropped beside her, squeezed her grandmother's hand.
Grandmère, no, don't.
I remember you.
Michelle stared at Ran.
You were with the ones who came for me.
Grandmère!
Ran chuckled.
A sharp memory you have for such an ancient thing.
Don't worry about him, Scarlet, said Michelle. He is only the Omega. He must have been left behind because he is too weak to join the battle.
Ran snarled, baring his jutting canines, and Scarlet shrank back.
I stayed behind, he growled, because I have unfinished business here.
His eyes flashed, practically glowing. There was nothing but hatred inside them, fiery and unrestrained. Scarlet shifted so that her body better covered her grandmother.
You are nothing, Michelle said,
her lashes dipping from exhaustion. Terror clutched at Scarlet's heart.
Nothing but a puppet for that thaumaturge. They've taken away your gift and turned you all into monsters. But even with all the strength, all the senses, all the bloodlust, you remain the lowest of your peers. And you always will be.
Scarlet's mind whirred, wanting the conversation to end, wanting her grandmother to stop goading him, knowing it made no difference. There was murder on Rand's face. A rough laugh burst out of him, his hands gripping the door jamb to either side, entirely blocking the exit.
You're wrong, you old hag. You know so much. You must know what becomes of a pack member who kills his alpha.
He didn't wait for her response.
He takes his alpha's place.
His cheeks dimpled.
And I've found that my brother, my alpha, has a weakness.
His words slipped off as his attention found Scarlet again.
You are a naive young man.
Her grandmother coughed.
You are weak. You will never be more than a lowly Omega. Even I can see that.
Scarlet hissed. She could see the fury building inside Ran, feel the anger rolling off him.
Grandmère!
Then it became obvious what her grandmother was trying to do.
No, she doesn't mean it,
she despised herself for pleading, but couldn't care.
She's old, she's delirious, just leave her!
Fuming into the cell, Ran snatched Scarlet up by her hair and pried her away from her grandmother. She shrieked, clawing at his forearm, but he tossed her back into the corner.
No!
Her grandma screamed in pain as Ran lifted her by the throat. In a blink, she was pinned against the wall, too weak to flail, to fight, to put up any resistance.
Leave her alone!
Scarlet scrambled up and jumped onto Ran's back, locking her elbows around his neck, squeezing with all her might. When Ran didn't even flinch, she clawed at him, aiming for his eye sockets. Ran howled and dropped her grandmother into a heap, then flung Scarlet off his back. She collapsed against the wall, but she barely felt the impact, her attention falling on her grandmother's limp, bandaged form.
Grandmère!
Their gazes met, and she could see, in an instant, that her grandmother would not be moving again. Her dry lips managed to stammer. But nothing followed. Her eyes lingered open, eerily empty. Scarlet shoved herself off the wall, but Ran was there first, his massive form crouching over her grandmother's body.
scooping one hand beneath her back so that her head fell heavily onto the hard floor. Like a starved animal having brought down his first kill, Ran leaned over and clamped his jaws over Michelle's neck. Scarlet screamed and fell backward. The world spun with the sight of blood, and Ran crouched on all fours. Her grandmother's accusation echoed back to her. "They've turned you all into monsters." Still in shock, she forced her face away and rolled onto her side. Her stomach heaved, but there was nothing inside her but bile and saliva. She tasted iron and acid and blood and realized she'd bitten her tongue when Ran had thrown her at the wall. But there was no pain, only hollowness and horror and a dark cloud creeping over her. She was not here. This was not happening. Stomach burning from trying to push up food that wasn't there, she crawled toward the far wall, putting as much distance between her and Ran as she could. Ran and her grandmother. Her hand fell into the streak of light from the hallway. Her skin was sickly pale. She was trembling.
"Run!"
Lifting her head, she could see the start of a stairwell at the end of the hallway. Beside it, a painted sign long since faded. "To stage."
Run.
Her brain struggled to find the meaning of the words. "To stage. Stage. Stage." Her grandmother's last words. "Run." Reaching forward, she wrapped her fingers around the bars of the cell and used them as leverage, straining to pull herself up, to stand, to push forward, into the hallway, into the light. Her legs felt non-existent at first, as she hobbled to the bottom of the stairs, but as she climbed, she found strength in them. She pushed forward. She ran. A closed door loomed at the top of the stairs, an old wooden door, not even equipped with an ID scanner. It creaked when she shoved it open. Then, footsteps below, coming for her. Scarlet emerged backstage. Old pillars stood clustered together to her right, and a maze of fake stone walls and painted trees filled the shadows to her left. The door slammed behind her as she ran into the wooden forest, grabbing a wrought iron candelabra. She lifted it in both hands and waited, feet braced. Ran burst through the door, chin covered in blood. Scarlet swung as hard as she could. A roar was wrenched out of her as the iron bar collided with Ran's skull. He cried out and stumbled back into the curtain. He tripped on the fabric and fell backward. Scarlet thrust the candelabra at him, not sure she had the strength to heft it again. She heard fabric ripping, but she was already gone, dodging between the set pieces, scanning the creaking wooden floorboards as she lunged over coiled, dusty power cords and toppled spotlights. She stumbled onto the stage, the empty expanse of wooden floorboards and trapdoors, and half-jumped, half-fell into the phantom orchestra. Ignoring a jolt of pain that burned across her knee, she shoved the music stands aside and bolted into the auditorium. Footsteps thumped across the stage behind her, inhumanly fast. The rows of empty chairs flashed by, and all she could see was the door looming ahead. He grabbed her hood. She let him pull her back, use the momentum to swing around and aim her knee for his groin. He let out a cry of pain and staggered. Scarlet darted through the crumbling marble arches, past the cherubs with their broken arms, past the shattered chandeliers and broken tile floors. She flew down the marble stairs, focusing on the huge doors that would lead to the street. If only she could get out of there, into public, into the real world. As she hit the lobby floor, the silhouette of another man moved across the exit. Her feet skidded to a stop, landing her in the square of pale sunlight from the hole in the ceiling. Pivoting, she ran for the other staircase, the stairs that went back down to the depths of the opera house. Above, a door slammed shut, and there were footsteps pounding, and she couldn't tell if it was one set of footsteps or two. Sweat coated the back of her shirt. Her legs ached. Her burst of adrenaline fading. She rounded a corner and barreled into darkness. The main room had once been used for important guests of the opera house, and a series of doors and hallways led to every corner of the sublevel.
Scarlet knew the halls to the right would take her back to the prison cells, so she veered left. A drained fountain basin filled the space between the two stairways that led to the upper level. The bronze statue of a half-dressed maiden lingered in an alcove atop a pedestal, one of the few statues that seemed to have survived so many years of neglect. Scarlet ran for the opposite staircase, wondering if going back up to the lobby would be suicide, and yet knowing that to be trapped down here was no alternative. She reached the bottom of the stairs, and her foot hit the low ledge of the fountain. She stumbled, crying out. Ran was on her before she hit the ground. Fingernails dug into her shoulder, flipping her onto her back amid the tiny broken tiles of the dry basin. She peered up into his glowing eyes, the eyes of a madman, of a murderer, and she remembered Wolf on stage at the street fight. Fear clamped her throat shut, strangling a scream. He gripped her shirt and lifted her from the ground. She grabbed his wrists, but was too petrified to fight as he brought her face toward his. Scarlet nearly gagged on the stench of his breath, like rotten meat and blood. So much blood. Her grandmother.
If it wasn't such a repulsive thought, I might take advantage of you here, now that we're all alone, he said, and Scarlet shuddered. Just to see the look on my brother's face when I told him about it.
With a roar, he threw her at the statue. Her back collided with the bronze pedestal, and pain exploded through her head, knocking the wind from her. She collapsed to the ground, grasping her chest, trying to draw air back into her lungs. Ran crouched before her, ready to spring, his tongue swiped out over his canines, coating them with strings of saliva. Her stomach lurched. She kicked at the ground in an attempt to put herself into the small space between the statue and the wall, to disappear, to hide. He sprang. She cowered against the wall, but the impact didn't come.